1, 2, 2.
3, 4, whatever.
What the fuck is that?
Episode 21 of Season 5, and welcome to Lug Radio.
Yep, the show's now old enough to buy beer in America and buy cigarettes here. I keep seeing signs saying Challenge 21.
Why the show would want to buy cigarettes?
Because they're fucking lovely.
But...
Welcome to your emphysema. What have we got on the show?
Well, welcome to the Stuart Langridge Laughter Show. And on today's show, we've got...
So we're going to talk about things we'd like to see fixed in the open source world.
Yep, and we're going to talk about Firefox and the Mozilla Corporation and the direction they're going in.
We discuss whether a new startup company stands a chance against the big boys.
And we've got a big announcement that I think everybody is going to be... interested in.
Ooh, exciting big announcement.
It's very big, right. And it's very announcement-y.
Yeah, and don't fast forward. Listen to the rest of the show first, all right?
Who are we?
So, my name is John O'Bacon.
I'm Chris Proctor.
I'm Adam Sweet.
And I'm Stuart Langridge. Okay, Adam believes he's got too much money, as I understand.
Thank you very much.
So, do you want to explain what you're going to do about that, Adam?
I think I know what he's going to do about that.
You pay our...
Fail.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you in your starring role on failblog.com.
I know your friends are so supportive of
you.
Yeah,
thanks for that. I mean, there is a strong possibility, in all honesty. But I've been thinking recently, I guess, much like a lot of people listening to the show...
What, thinking?
No,
bit
no.
of a reach with all this.
More on that later.
Okay, so...
that joke's a lot funnier when you've heard the bit at the end.
Right, okay. I almost feel like I ought to just start again. I've been thinking a lot recently. For the last couple of years, I've certainly been thinking about it, but only recently it's kind of become a bit more focused in that... I would like to set up my own company. Yeah. So, fucking, we've already wasted all the gags on Adam's not going to have any money on fail.com and so on.
So I believe there was mention of a cardboard box as well.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, so Adam, would you like to tell everybody about how you're going to spend the rest of your life in a cardboard box? Now, I've been thinking about setting up my own company for a couple of years and...
Peckham Water.
Thank you very much for that.
We ought to let him actually, you know, before we stick the boat in.
We'll just string this out for 25 minutes and get to the point at the end.
No content. Sorry, so tell us, Adam, what are you thinking of doing?
So, I mean, there are certain things that I think I'm quite good at, and I'd like to go into business doing them. The thing that worries me, though, is the IT market at the moment, of course, is dominated by a lot of big players. Little guys like me don't really stand a chance because, first of all, straight out of the blocks, I don't have the money to pay anybody else's salary other than my own.
Right.
I don't even have any money to pay my own salary yet, but we'll worry about that another time.
Always a good approach with business.
And so, first of all, this business is only going to be able to start out doing things that I'm capable of doing.
Yeah.
Unless I'm setting up a music project of Creative Commons music, in which case I get everybody else to do everything apart from the music.
Harshness.
Yeah, well, that'll fucking learn you, won't it?
Surprised he hasn't outsourced the music, to be honest.
Fuck you.
Might be better.
Oi!
Arsehole.
Yeah, you are an arsehole. More on that later.
I think I've got enough skills to kind of get off the ground. I'm not sure if I have... the skills to compete against people like Google and Yahoo and certainly not Microsoft, but I'm not going into the operating system business. Can't do little people like me stand a chance unless you've got mega funding behind you, either a serious amount of investment or venture capitalists, do you think?
I'd say there's a few things. First of all, I don't know what you're wanting to do, and I can understand you probably don't want to say, because you probably want to...
I mean,
keep it under
yeah,
your
I don't really want to go into it in particular, certainly, as I've, I haven't even got that far into planning it yet.
But I don't think that every business that starts up is necessarily going out there to immediately compete with someone like Google or a very large organization. Yeah. I mean, You know, it's probably unlikely you're going to be, well, I mean, first of all, you won't even be in the same playing field as so you're more likely to be competing. So let's say for the sake of argument, I don't know what you're doing. Genuinely, I don't, just so people know, I'm not going to try and secretly reveal what Adam's doing. I actually don't know. But let's assume you wanted to do hosting, right? You're not necessarily going to be competing with somebody like one-on-one. Mm-hmm. You're more likely going to be competing with people like Bite Mark. And that's why I compare yourself.
It's hosting related. But my issue is, if I were to host mail, how do I convince people to buy my mail instead of using Gmail and Hotmail and Yahoo?
Surely the trick you have to go for is you don't do mail. Mm-hmm. What you have to do is you have to pick something that's a bit more specific. That find a niche within mm-hmm. mail. So, for example, secure mail, the mail that is encrypted and no one can read, kind of thing. Find yourself a little niche that will have its own specific set of customers that Gmail doesn't cope with.
Yeah. The key point about this, I get to tell my 37 Signal story now.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things I wanted you to bring up. Yeah.
Yeah. This is something. 37 Signals are a web company. Some people have heard of them, those people who haven't, if you've heard of Ruby on Rails, they invented it. And they basically built a business, quite a profitable business. And I was listening to David Hanson, guy who runs, one of the guys who runs 37 Signals, talking about business models. And something he said kind of dawned on me. Before I got the job I've got, I was toying with the idea of going out freelance. Mm-hmm. And listening to him talk about stuff and thinking about it, it occurred to me that you probably don't need to actually compete. There's probably more customers out there than there are people serving them. And you don't need to say, I'm going to take all of those customers. You don't have to think, everyone I win is someone that Bite Mark has lost. Or if you're doing hosting, say, as an example. Yeah. It's more that if you can convince 100 people to pay you £20 a month for some service... Right, that's £2,000 a month. That's £25,000 a year you've made there, which is a living wage. It's not a brilliant wage, but it's a living wage. And that's 100 people. There are 56 million people in the UK. Most of them are not going to be customers for what you're offering. Yeah. But you've got to pick up 100 people out of 6 billion in the world. You must be able to make 100. Sure. And at that point, you're okay. You don't have to try and be... The thing about a lot of people setting up companies, the thing that venture capitalists look for is... They're interested in people who are going to be the next Facebook and make 100 million quid.
Yeah. Yep.
But you don't have to. Yeah. You want to make, if you pulled down £80,000 a year, you'd be sitting pretty on a nice pile of cash. And for that, you don't need that much.
A lot of it depends on how investment focused you are. Like, if your purpose is to basically cover your salary. So when I was a freelancer, I just wanted to earn enough money that I could afford to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
right?
Basically
and if that's what you want to do, then I'd say the bar's fairly low. But if you want to build a successful business to generate enough revenue to invest into another area, then obviously it's a whole different
ballgame. If you're planning on building a growing business, it's a lot harder than going, okay, I'm going to get what I want my salary to be, and then I'm going to divide it by 12 months a year and however many customers to get down to a reasonable price, and then say, that's the number of customers I need.
I think, go on, Chris.
I was just saying, there's a good point here. There's a lot of, when people talk about, setting up IT companies, they think startup, they think Silicon Valley, they think, getting your 20 million venture capital funding, and pissing it all up the wall or becoming the next Facebook. And but most IT companies in the world will be one man and his dog who will make quite a nice living. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that would be more my plan. I have no plans to be the next MySpace or the next Facebook, and certainly not even necessarily.
Of course, if you could be the next Facebook, that's even better.
Oh, yeah, it'd be quite handy to be the next Facebook and still own it and then sell it. I'd be quite happy with that. Thank you very much. Adam Buntu, here we come. but, I mean, certainly I'm not over keen on the idea of external funding, particularly venture capital, because, I mean, a lot of people think about starting their own company in the theory that you'll never be a millionaire working for somebody else, and a lot of people would like to set up their own business because nobody likes to go to work every day and have somebody else riding their ass all day.
I mean, you wouldn't even be in the ballpark of venture capital anyway, from what I can tell. And the thing is, I mean, it's like, I could imagine potentially having some small private investment from somebody else. So, this may be a friend who says, okay, I think what you're doing is really good. I'll invest. you know, 20 grand or 50 grand or something like that into the company with the expectation that they'll get a return on their investment.
Yeah. Sorry again, Chris. So me and Chris always compete for the microphone at the right moment.
It's just we only did like a tenth of the time on the air. That's what it was.
Finger to you and finger to you.
Woe is you. Right. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, the thing you have to remember, though, is that there's only if you go that business model of only having only looking to make sort of 80,000 a year, there are certain businesses that are closed to you. You are never going to be a chip design company that earns that kind of money.
I know you're
not allegedly. You know what I mean. Yeah. There are some things you can do one person and make that sort of money, and there are other things where you need 100 million investors.
I've got no objection to suddenly raking in a couple of million a year.
No, but you need starting money.
Well, my issue at the moment is I've got very little. Well, at the moment I've got no starting capital, but by the time I come to actually put it into action, I will have just enough capital to start off very small and very simple. And the plan would be to grow it out as add more features, and make it more and more attractive as you go along.
The thing I think is interesting about this discussion is that there will be a lot of people listening to this. So a lot of people in the IT industry who are thinking, well, I could probably run my own business, but I don't want it because I'm scared that it won't go ahead, or I don't have enough money behind me. And the reason is I used to think, you know, I couldn't do this because, you know, you've got to have a load of money in the bank and you've got to think about how you're going to employ staff and everything. And you don't actually, I'm going to sound like, you know, I'm preaching the American dream here, but if you're reasonably talented at IT, there is space, you're prepared to work, there is space out there in the market for you. And most of the people listening to this show, I would say, are going to be of the kind of age where they can do it now, whereas 10 years from now, they might not be able to.
Sure.
Yeah. Once you've got, you know, a stable job and a stable mortgage and two kids and so on, you're a lot less free to say, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, I'm going to chuck it up all in the air and live on a knife edge for a bit. But if you're 23 and you're just out of university and you're living in a flat on your own or whatever, and you have to eat one bean salad for a few months rather than pizzas all the time because you haven't got any money because your company's starting up, then there you go. And now, you know, kind of seize the day thing, really.
I think timing's certainly a very important factor, but I think ultimately, the thing I'm worried about recently is the fact that certainly with the things I'm able to do, I'm in a market of some quite fierce competitors, like well-known competitors. I think half the battle is you've got to have it. Well, they can pay geniuses. So, I mean, take Google, for example. Well, Google can pay some of the best minds in the world to design and develop this thing. I only have my own skills because I don't have the funding to pay somebody to help. And I think my worry is that I'm going to have to find a way of making my product will be unique enough to make it attractive.
Yeah, I think that's the trick. The thing that Google can afford to pay, as you say, the brightest minds in their generation to design Gmail for them.
Yeah.
But if they do that, they're then not interested in 100 customers. If you find a niche that only has 100 people in the country don't want it, but are they all prepared to pay money you're the only person who does it, you can make that.
You can live in the edges. That's precisely the point. They pay the bill because they need 90% of the market. Yeah. Otherwise, their investment isn't worth it.
I think it was you said earlier, Chris, most of the IT industry, people aren't even aware of. It's just one man and his dog.
I think the thing is, as well, is that, I mean, it's about addressable market. Like, Google will be going for large organizations. I'd imagine that significant chunks of Google won't even be interested in people like SMEs. You know, they'll be interested in very large organizations. And some companies, you know, and either small companies or contractors or, you know, the kind of people who would be customers for you, probably don't want to go with someone like Google. They might want somebody who's local, is a good example. You know, Google don't have an office in Wolverhampton.
I think there's
right? And that can be a unique selling point in itself. I think that it's maybe too harsh on yourself to unless you're going on, unless you're like, you know, getting probably into things like operating system development, right? It's probably a bit
unlikely,
harsh on yourself to be comparing yourself to someone, a large organization like that, because you'll always feel like you're never going to have a chance.
Yeah.
Whereas I'd compare you more like to a company like Pale Purple.
Right.
You know, or, I don't know, Linux Emporium.
I mean,
that kind of smallish company.
I tell you what, I mean, one of the reference companies I've been thinking about, that are probably similar to me are, I don't know if you're aware of them, Bitfolk.
No, you know the name vaguely.
Andy Smith from Look.org.uk. Oh, yeah, yeah. He started a Zen hosting company about 2 years ago or something. He basically did it as a hobby about a year. And then about a year ago, he took it, made a proper company. And
he said to himself, I'm actually making enough money at this in my spare time that I could do it full time.
Yeah, I'm not actually, I don't know, because I've not even spoken to him about it actually. But I'm not sure whether he's like quit the day job and living off what he's earning. But certainly that's the kind of model that I'd probably end up doing.
My view, and some people will obviously disagree with me on this, but my view is that in terms of earning yourself, I think somebody who's averagely talented, like as in somebody who is less talented than you. I mean, you're good at what you do, right? I think even someone who's not as good as what you do, I think in terms of earning enough money to cover their own salary and, you know, to cover tax and keep it all above board and everything, I think basically everybody has got the opportunity to be successful. Mm-hmm. I think it basically comes down to graft.
Yes.
If you're willing to put graft in,
I have no problem with that, yeah.
Then you will do it.
I think the fear for me is that certainly VC-funded startups and new projects that spin out of Google have got enough internal brain share. They've got enough internal brains to come up with such a unique and clever idea. I fear that I don't necessarily have that amount of minds to bounce off, obviously because I've only got my own. And certainly there's a Darwinistic element to it that you've got to be bright, capable, and have a really good idea
to
start with.
There's an alternative to that, though, in the fact that you can afford to take risks. Whereas Doodle has shareholders. If they release something and they fuck it up completely, then their share price tanks and their board, they all get sacked.
I think ultimately...
It's comparing like for like as well. I mean, if Google are going to take a risk, they're going to take a risk with a multi-million dollar project. Yeah. If you're going to take a risk, you're going to take a risk with a multi-thousand pounds project. Okay?
And end up in a cardboard box.
Like, the thing is that I think it depends. If you're talking about developing an application... Mm-hmm. And being able to compete with somebody who's already established in the marketplace and is addressing that marketplace, everything from one man and his dog upwards to Ford, then yes, it's going to be difficult. But, you know, it's like so many companies start out with one guy or one girl working on a software application, and then they sell either a few licenses or they get a few customers, and then they might be able to contract someone, or their friend comes in, or someone comes in and invests, even if it's just investing their time, and they figure out a contractual agreement in terms of sharing revenue and things like that. And it just grows. I think it goes step by step.
There's one thing I thought about while I've been having this segment. It occurred in my mind today, actually. As we said, there's a lot of these kind of, particularly in open source, I think, in the UK, there's a lot of these kind of one man and his dog companies. Yeah. And certainly, I'd imagine that no one company has the skill to do all of the work that comes their way.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether it'd be possible to have some kind of, almost like a cooperative, where work comes your way, perhaps like a kind of an agreed cooperative of some kind.
I could say this sort of thing happens in the web world a lot.
Right.
People who are freelance web people, work will come in that they haven't got time to do it, and they'll kick it out basically to friends of theirs saying, I haven't got the capacity to pick this up. Does someone else want to do it? And then work comes your way that way. I've had freelance work come my way on that basis quite a lot. It doesn't have to be a kind of a formal sign some work comes in and then we parcel it out thing.
Yeah.
You just get involved with people who are already in the business and say, you know, when work comes your way that you don't fancy taking on because it's too small for you or you're too busy or whatever, boot it in my direction and it gets you off the ground, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
We've got the advantage that because we're working in open source stuff to some extent, there's a kind of a community focus around that, and your costs are lower, and you can you can pull in community help on things. You're not developing all the products yourself necessarily.
Yeah. The other thing that people do as well, of course, is groups of companies come together to get bigger tenders. So, for example, I think they're called WMETA. It's the West Midlands IT Association.
Right.
And basically, it's a bunch of small companies who come together to get a particular government contract or something. So for the sake of argument, you were doing hosting, you could team up with somebody who provides a certain application, and then maybe a consultancy company. You provide the hosting side of things, and then the three of you bid for the contract, and you each satisfy that element.
That's certainly one of the kinds of things I was thinking were an option. As you say, no one of all these small kind of little pockets of open source companies, in the through the UK, no one company's got all the resources to do everything that might come as part of a potential tender. Mm. So you could have a kind of loose agreement with a number of other companies who are able to fill in parts of that tender.
Mm. The only other thing to bear in mind is that the government in the UK are quite keen on the idea of people setting up businesses, so there is help for this kind of thing. I know in the US they're very keen on the kind of entrepreneurial spirit. I don't know what it's like in other countries, but I suspect it's the same. People, governments like the idea of businesses being set up, so they try and encourage you. There is help out there.
You know, in recent years, there's been a lot of talk about web browsers. You know, everything's moving over to the web, cloud computing, all that kind of stuff, okay? And Firefox has been at the center of this.
Yes.
And for a long time, there's two things which I'd like to talk about in this segment, right? Number one is that Firefox was kind of the poster child for open source for a long time. You know, we were saying, Firefox is amazing, and spread Firefox and all this kind of stuff, and the New York thingy,
New York Times advert
and all the rest of it. And now I've been hearing rumblings about how, well, you know, we support it on Linux, but, you know, it's kind of less important than Windows because that's where everybody's using it, which feels kind of, I'd hate to use the word disingenuous, but it kind of feels along those lines.
Would you hate to use the word disingenuous because you don't know what it means?
I know what it means. But anyway.
How does it fit into that sentence then?
Well, it's kind of, I think it fits.
The word you're looking for is betrayal, surely.
I think that's probably a stronger word.
I mean, I think basically what you mean is they're kind of casually going, oh, fuck, they're a pain in the arse, aren't they? To probably, I don't know, what, like 10, 15, 20% of their users, do you think?
It kind of, I mean, I know that in the open source community, we tend to have a perspective that open source tends to thrive around open source operating systems, right? So, you know, earlier on when we were talking about this, having a cup of tea, we were talking about things like, you know, a good example is something like GCC. Melons. And a melon for being display for display purpose only, but GCC, you know, and the whole suite of kind of shell level tools that GCC will fit into as well, but we're seeing.
See, I was thinking you described it like that because you just off the top of your head you couldn't think of another one.
What, another what?
Another command line development tool.
Binutils.
Right.
Libtool.
That's the one you mentioned earlier, but I just got the impression you couldn't remember the name of it.
Core Utils. Busybox.
Okay.
Fuck you.
Fuck you, man.
getting slightly off point.
Anyway, so that's the first point of discussion. The second thing is that we're also hearing rumblings about WebKit, and it seems like all the cool kids are talking about WebKit, and then we're seeing more and more blog entries from people saying, oh, Firefox is kind of fucking it up a little bit, and, you know, maybe we should think about something else. So the one thing is, you know, WebKit, is this something that's interesting? And secondly, can we ever have confidence in a project moving forward without having to shift to the latest cool thing? So let's start it off with whether they're kind of sticking in with that open source route.
Well, I'm not sure you can blame them for concentrating on what must be 85, 90% of their user base. Mm. They're basically saying, well, if Windows users are, you know, say 90% of our user base, why should we fuck them over for our 10% of Linux people? Even though, you know,
do you need to fuck one over the other one, though? I mean,
as far as I can tell, when people talk about how Firefox or the Mozilla Corporation and so on are kind of stepping away from Linux or are serving their Windows customers better or whatever, they're talking about one of the following things. Nice. There was a thing a few months ago about Firefox not being linked properly against some library on Linux or something, which I never really got to the bottom of. And then they weren't going to fix that in Firefox 3. Mm. And so that was a problem, and it only occurred on Linux. And the Firefox team went, well, we're going to release 3 with this bug in it. And yeah, it causes a problem, but we don't have the resources to fix it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that when they originally came out with the new snazzy themes for Firefox, they did a Mac theme, which was quite native on the Mac, and they did a Windows theme, which was quite native on Windows, and they basically didn't bother with the Linux one at all. And there was a lot of pushback on that, and then they said, okay, and brought Linux up to be an equal tier partner with the other two. And then the third thing is about Firefox's control over their trademarks and how that fits in with the whole
whole open source ethos and things like iSqueezel and so on, being an unbranded version of Firefox, which is genuinely open source if you're the Software Foundation person.
Two of those are essentially Firefox going, we have so much engineering time, we can either concentrate on 10% of our market or 90% of our market.
As far as I can tell, the answer to Jono's question from earlier of do you have to fuck one over for the other? If you've got limited engineering resource and you've got bugs all over the place to fix, then yes, that's what you have to do.
I guess so.
How do you blame them for that? I mean, is that not a good thing? The fact that they're managing to push out a very good Windows product that a lot of people who use Windows now are seeing as a viable alternative, viable piece of open source software they can use.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm playing devil's advocate. I mean, I think that Mozilla are doing the right thing. But it reminds me in some ways of, drawing an analogy with music, which I'm obviously interested in, a band
Shit.
Kind of...
I thought you were into metal.
Sorry. And it's like a band kind of...
Was that your rebuttal?
Yeah, basically, yes. It's like a band starting out and developing kind of like a loyal local fan base and then getting really big and ignoring the local fan base.
Or like Metallica encouraging people to swap tapes when they were small and then
suing Napster. Suing Napster. But it's kind of that's
selling out the people who
when
got
I said
you
disingenuous,
you
that's kind of the thing that I'm. I'd take
that point, but as I say, they have limited engineering and resource. That's the word. Limited engineering resource, but they have to pay this engineering resource. They have to pay the people they employ.
But it doesn't seem...
It's a slightly different thing in the sense that so at the end of every month, they have to make a wage bill. And the way to make the wage bill is to get Firefox out there to as many people as possible. And the way to do that is to target the majority platform.
But as far as I'm aware, there's not as much of an issue with this. There is some of an issue, but there is not as much of an issue with this with OpenOffice. And that's a far larger piece of code from what I can gather.
Yeah,
and I don't know if there's significantly... there are clearly more developers working on OpenOffice, but I don't know if there's a significantly higher number of developers. What I'm saying to you is...
Surely the problem there is that some have lots of money, or
the question is, do we believe that Mozilla is managing this effectively enough? Do we believe that they could actually improve, I'm not saying go all one way towards Windows, all one way, and take all those resources away from Linux, let's say there's 70% of the resources going towards Windows and 30% towards Linux. We'll ignore Mac for a second, right? Do you think they could balance it better based upon the evidence that we've got from
Watson? Well, to me, two things stick out, really. First of all, the thing about OpenOffice, I think everybody's always said that OpenOffice seems to be developing at a snail's pace. It hasn't evolved a lot in the last 2 or 3 years. It's refined a little, and it's probably got a little bit faster, but features, it hasn't become noticeably feature.
Yeah.
The feature set don't seem to have evolved a great deal. The other thing I was going to say is, do you think this may be? Oh fuck! I fucking lost it again. I think I was going to say something like, do you think perhaps Mozilla aren't? Their core products aren't diverse enough. Do you think they're kind of... One of the things we were talking about before the segment was the Mozilla platform. I don't think this was my point at all, but I may as well just carry on while I'm here.
there is an interesting point, yeah. Are they wasting their engineering... What engineering resource they do have?
Yeah, sorry. I've actually remembered what I was on about now. It's kind of handy. And it was in the right kind of direction.
Your point is important to us.
Do you think that... I mean, this is my naive perspective. I'm not a developer. But wasn't Zool supposed to be pretty much cross-platform in the first place?
Zool is cross-platform.
Which meant that the major differences between the operating systems, supporting different operating systems, weren't supposed to be that great.
Now...
That's just a toolkit, though, isn't it?
Yeah, the important point about this is not... that you can develop. If the Mozilla people wanted to develop a browser which looked and worked identically on all three platforms, they could do it today. And that's to a large extent what Firefox 2 was.
Right.
It was very similar on Windows, on the Mac.
This is probably my level of understanding.
What the thing they've been trying to do with Firefox 3 is make it a much more native application on each of the platforms. So on the Linux desktop, it integrates better with the way Linux does things. On the Mac desktop, it feels one of the big complaints that Mac people have always had about Firefox is it doesn't feel like a Mac application. Yeah, and it feels like a Windows application that happens to be on the Mac. In the same way that if you run a Wine application on Linux, I mean, it works and the menus all work and everything, but it doesn't feel like a native application. Yeah, it's got its own dialogue boxes for doing things. It doesn't pay attention to your system configuration.
Yeah.
And that's what Firefox felt like on all three platforms.
And to be fair to Mozilla, they've done an excellent job with Firefox 3 in terms of that.
Yes, on all three
they've
platforms.
They've done an excellent job.
Which is why I think the accusations about them moving away from the Linux community are reasonably unfounded. Because Firefox 3 is a much better, much more native Linux application than it was before. It's much more native, much better Mac application than it was before. The thing I think is interesting about your point, the way I see it, is that Mozilla on Windows, Firefox on Windows, is just an application. On Linux, it's kind of a core part of the experience.
Yeah.
So if you step back a bit on Windows, you're just stepping back on an application. It's not a big part of people's lives, whereas if you step back a bit on Linux, it feels much more important because Firefox has always been an absolutely key part. There's basically no replacement for it. Up until very, very, very recently, there's been basically nothing else. You could run Opera as long as you didn't mind running a non-open source browser.
Yeah.
You could run Netscape 4, which was rubbish and years out of date.
Or Conqueror.
You could run Conqueror, which wasn't bad, but until the WebKit people picked it up, got to work on KHTML, they just didn't have the engineering resource to build a world-class browser engine.
Yeah. I'm talking about is not so much the quality of the software. It's more the kind of the perception of Mozilla as an organization that has arguably gained its success from many people in the open source community pushing it because it's open source and believing that Mozilla is a good organization doing the right thing. And whether Mozilla can maintain an allegiance to those people as it moves forward. And all I'm saying is that some people, and I kind of share some of their concerns, but I don't think it's a big issue, but some people are suggesting that Mozilla are beginning to lose a little focus on that and beginning to forget that side of things. And one of the elements of those of forgetting those sides of things is by neglecting Linux support to a degree. And I think this is primarily with Firefox 2. I mean, it was Firefox 3, Blizzard wrote a fantastic summary about all of the things that were going into it.
The thing I think is interesting about that, when they originally said, we've got this brilliant new theme that we've developed and we've thought about and it's going to be brilliantly native on platforms, Windows, Mac version, and there was a big hole where there should be a Linux version. And I think they were surprised at the amount of kickback they got. I think, yes, the Mozilla Corporation were letting their support for Linux, them seeing Linux as a tier one platform along with Windows and the Mac. I think they did see that kind of drop off a bit. And then when they got all the pushback about the theming thing, I think they went, oh, fuck. These people really do care about this stuff, and there's more of them than we thought there were. And now they've jacked it back up again. I think they were starting to drift away, and now they've stopped
Now they're kind of identifying it.
Yeah.
Moving on a little bit then to WebKit. I mean, a lot of people are kind of beginning to say, oh, Firefox 3 or Firefox is shit, we should think about other WebKit-based applications and think about something else and blah, 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 blah. What are your thoughts on that?
I've always had the impression, sorry, jumping there.
No.
I've always had the impression that basically the kind of the logic behind that is the Gecko, the rendering engine from Mozilla, is big, clunky, quite kind of a heavyweight thing, whereas WebKit is much more lightweight and easier to embed in your own application without using up all the RAM in the entire world. Am I making this up? Am I pulling this out of my arse?
Absolutely not.
I mean, I'm looking a couple of years ahead, perhaps. I think if Linux isn't going to be a tier one supported platform with Firefox in the future, we're obviously going to be looking at alternatives. And I've been using Epiphany a little over the last couple of days. It really does feel completely different, even though it's the same rendering engine. The application itself to me just feels completely different and not as enjoyable. Maybe that's just because it is just a different application, even though the rendering engine is the same. And I know, I believe the Epiphany people have been complaining about the version of Gecko that hasn't really been updated in the last year or so, the release version.
Sort of.
And are looking at WebKit as an alternative.
Bored now, mind-smashing technical detail coming up. The people's complaint about the difference, the distinction you need to draw is WebKit is a rendering engine like Gecko is.
Yep. Yes.
At the moment,
On Linux, where I'm just purely talking about Linux for the moment, there is Firefox, an excellent native application which embeds Gecko and is a web browser.
Yeah.
There is WebKit as a rendering engine, and there is no particular browser which embeds it.
Yeah.
So at the moment, you can use WebKit. Where people want something to do... Hang on. I'm getting there. Where people want something to do HTML rendering, they want something to tie into GTK, they want something to render HTML to do help pages or whatever. A lot of people are looking at WebKit for that kind of thing, in the same way that Nokia took WebKit and built the System 60 browser out of it, so on and so forth, for mobile phones. At the moment, there is no decent browser application. The Epiphany people are seriously looking at WebKit, to the point where the next version of Epiphany will have a WebKit backend rather than a Gecko backend. And their problem is not that Gecko hasn't got better, it's that the Mozilla team haven't devoted the resources they would like to see devoted to making Gecko embeddable. It's not Mozilla, it's not Gecko, it's GTK Moz Embed. The way of embedding Gecko in your application, it's annoying and crafty, and it's jolly difficult to have your application poke things into the browser. I know, because I've done this, right? That's what Jackfield was, and it was an unbelievable pain in the arse.
Yes.
WebKit, they've tried to make it so it's a much more embeddable engine, and Gecko hasn't got that kind of treatment, which is what an Epiphany, being an application which embeds a rendering engine, want a rendering engine which is easily embeddable, hence WebKit.
I miss Conqueror in that description. They don't
Conqueror embed WebKit.
Yeah, and are they not a valid and legitimate browser?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I'll be honest with you.
So when you say there isn't a valid and legitimate browser, so, this is WebKit.
So, yes. I guess we're... Sorry, that was completely unfair, actually.
I guess you're talking from a known user's perspective.
I am talking from a known user's perspective, and that was really unfair to the Conqueror people.
As I'm sure they will tell us.
I use Conqueror occasionally. It's very good.
I haven't used Conqueror for a while, from long before KHTML became WebKit. No, and it wasn't... KHTML wasn't a brilliant rendering engine back then, and Conqueror spent a lot of its time doing lots of other things, like being the file manager. And now it's not like that. I suspect it's absolutely brilliant, but I've literally just picked up and looked at it, and that's it. But you are right to bring that up.
I've got one more question from... I'm clearly not a web guy anyway, so I'm not sure what's happened in the last 2 years since Apple came in, took KHTML, and spat out WebKit. How reliant on Apple is WebKit these days?
There are a reasonable amount of non-Apple committers to the WebKit source tree. I mean, WebKit's completely open source.
Yeah.
And there's a reasonable amount of Apple hackers on it, there's a reasonable amount of non-Apple hackers on it. They are doing, as I understand it, the lion's share of the work.
I'm not sure is that a bad thing, though, because it's not as if they're going to drop it.
No. WebKit's well critical to Apple these days.
Yeah.
Well, we've got some news to report.
We have news to report.
So this is something that's... you think you know how you're going to say it, but you don't actually know how you're going to say it. I was all prepared about 5 seconds ago. So basically, in a nutshell, we've decided we're going to wrap up Lug Radio.
We are indeed. Lug Radio Live, which is a month from now, will be the last Lug Radio show.
Yes. Yeah. The reasoning behind this is quite simply that we've been doing Lug Radio for now for what, 4 years? 5 years?
4 or 5 years. 5 seasons, this will be now.
And we love doing the show. We've had a great time. We've interviewed tons of guests, and we've had some great presenters. But
thank you.
apart from you,
and us.
Great guest presenters. We meant there, to be honest with you.
Press and company excluded. but yeah, we just kind of feel like we've done a lot with the show, and now is about the right time to wrap it up. Because one thing we're very conscious of is that we don't want Lug Radio to turn into Spandau Ballet.
No, one of these things that goes on and on and on. We want to go out on a high. You're supposed to leave everybody wanting more.
I mean, amongst one of the things we were thinking about really are, I mean, this is the end of the Lug Radio Live will be the end of the season. And I think it's not very easy to change the format now. I think to continue probably for another 3, 4, 5 seasons, we would have to do something radically different to keep it fresh, keep it exciting, keep it lively. Yeah. And
So the most radical difference we could think of was not doing it at all.
I mean, as you said, you wouldn't want to flog the horse until it can't stand anymore, as it were.
Yeah.
Some might say we've already done that, to be honest. You know?
Well, yeah, to be honest with you. But no, I mean, exactly. We've been talking about it and everything, and I'm really pleased with everything we've done with it. And it feels like Lug Radio Live this year feels like a good place to say, this is what we've done. These are our numbers. Mm-hmm.
I think the thing is, I mean, looking back a little bit, I mean, we've said we're not going to be too retrospective in this show because we'd like to do that at Lug Radio Live when we're surrounded by, you know, all of our friends.
And a pint or two.
A couple of pints, yeah, that Saturday night, Jesus. when I think back to when we started the show, and our ambition with it was to basically create something that we thought was funny and we thought was interesting and hopefully find other people who we thought were funny and interesting too. And when we look at what we've produced in terms of the content, but not only that, but everything around it, such as the community and the forums people and the people in the ISE channel and the clan and all the rest of it, I think I feel incredibly proud about everything we've managed to achieve.
I think, certainly from my own point of view, I've been both listener and obviously presenter now. And the one thing about Lug Radio is that I guess is a testament to you two, Ak and Jono particularly, and also Matt, Aid, Sparks, Chris, and even me, the fact that, especially when I was a listener rather than a presenter, I always used to listen to the show and go, actually, fucking hell, I'd never even thought about that.
Hmm.
And that it kind of raises the attention to certain things that I would never have even thought about and raises questions about things that I had thought about. Raises questions that I wouldn't have thought about those aspects of a particular subject. So I think certainly I always found the show very enlightening and it made me think about things that I wouldn't have even considered before.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to pat ourselves on the back too much, you know, but here's your chance to do that for us instead. What we...
the definition of laziness.
What we can't even be bothered to congratulate ourselves. No, I mean, what we'd like to do is at Lug Radio Live this year, have a kind of a retrospective looking back on the last 100-something episodes.
Yeah.
So send us in the stuff you thought was good.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice for us to... We've not really spent too much time thinking about how we'd like to wrap up with in terms of, like, thoughts and memories and things like that of what's happened over the last 4 years. But we'd like to do something at Lug Radio Live. So certainly send in your favourite moments in Lug Radio, your most frustrating moments, your general thoughts about the show.
All the times that Jono was wrong.
Thank you. Which is very few, in fact.
I'll be amazed if anyone can find a piece of paper big enough.
Something which we've also talked about, and there's no promises here, but we'd like to create something that basically encapsulates some of these things. Whether this is anything from a web page or whether it's like a book or something, you know, but we'd like to do something to kind of encapsulate everything that's happened in the last four or five years. But obviously we need content for that. So do let us know. And obviously Lug Radio Live UK, 19th and 20th of July in Hampton is going to be one final bash.
It is. It's going to be one last big mother party. One last mother of a blowout.
It's going to be a bit weird, you know.
It is. It's going to be very, very weird.
I think
step on stage for the last time.
I think one of the things we wanted to make clear just before we started this, first of all, my new business plan is not the reason for the end of Lug Radio.
Talking
about this just before this segment, Adam's saying, what if everyone thinks that, you know, I talked about this new business thing and that's why it's happening?
And again, for Jono, I'm quite sure he'd like everyone to understand that Severed Fifth is not the reason why
Severed Fifth
has come to this decision.
It's got nothing to do with it.
And we've not had a big row or anything.
Yeah, it's weird because...
I mean, I never liked it from the beginning.
It's weird because when Matt left, some people thought that we'd had an argument and Matt had left, you know, and not very nice terms, and not at all. And
completely not the case.
The four of us are still really close friends, and Ak's still very wrong, and Chris is still madly in love with the network block driver.
This is true.
Yeah.
About the block drop.
You know, so Chris is going off, jetting into the sun.
I'm going
into
off to
the
spend
sunset.
More time with my source code.
You're going to start up the network block driver fellowship, aren't you? I believe.
Adam's going to spend more time with his hair gel.
Yes. You're going to have to spend more time with pies, obviously.
I'll fucking learn you, won't it?
And Jono's going to spend more time by himself.
I just, yeah.
But yes, you know, so, gang, this is it. What we want you to do is come and celebrate with us. 19th and 20th of July, Lug Radio Live in Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
Go to lugradio.org/live, turn up on the door with your £5 and come and party with us one last time.
One thing we've been talking about is if you could change anything and fix any problem in the Linux or open source world, what would you fix?
Chris wouldn't have been born.
That's not a problem in the open source world. He's entirely proprietary from top to bottom.
Actually, after the...
I'm going home then. See ya.
In all honesty, after the booting Chris just gave me between segments, I'm inclined to agree with Johnny at the moment. Yeah.
It was a start.
Because you never boot me at all between segments.
In fact,
segments.
You booted Adam and I within, like, the same breath.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you both deserved it.
He just breathed on you. I can recommend Aquafresh.
The network block driver's not working this week, so he's all pissed off.
Network broke driver. Right, anyway. So, anyway, we were talking about things we'd fix. This is one of those, you know, it's never going to happen, but we'd like to see it anyway. So, Chris, what about the network block driver would you like to see fixed?
Would you like to reduce the number of mem copies?
You almost forgot then, didn't you?
Very nearly.
Sorry,
I'm not as familiar with a network block code as I used to be.
Yeah, the number of mem copies is fine. It's the spin locks you have to reduce.
Really? Those spin locks,
ref counts,
they piss me off, to be honest with you.
Ref counts.
I fucking hate ref counts.
Dash,
but, you
dash,
know.
Fun roll loops.
IOCTL, and it's the Swiss Army knife of C commands, so it's all fine.
I believe
it says that in a man page somewhere.
What none of the listeners don't understand is that we had this theory ages ago, just throwing statements that we'd heard other people say into interviews and see what the interviewee said. However, we're doing it now.
It worked at UDS once. When I spoke to Ben Collins, the kernel guy at Canonical, and I asked him for some choice kernel terms. And then I went and joined a conversation with a couple of kernel people. And then just dropped one of these terms in, and they both looked at me as if to say... Huh?
How is that relevant?
And then they responded in gibberish, and I was like,
It's like the game in meetings. Before a meeting, you open up a dictionary, just pick a random word, you know, and then you have to, the base simple version of the game is you have to get that word into the meeting. The hard version, you have to get someone else to say the word.
Perfect.
Like, that's gonna be a good
game. Honestly, it's hours of old people at work listening to this going, that explains a lot.
It was a similar thing when Mirko Muller joined the Lug Radio community. He was, you know, well known in the Lug Radio community before he became this desktop bling wizard, right?
Because we all ate yogurt.
Yeah. That's right, exactly. And when he first got on Planet Gnome, I said to him, you have to say the word chinny raccoon and a bunch of other things in this post, and he sprinkled them in this post about, you know, DRI.
The DRI even still exists, but we have to do that. Next time you're in a meeting, pick a word.
Is anybody else allowed to know that that's what you're trying to do?
No. The best thing about it, I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and there was a panel at the end, and you got about halfway through this panel, and I thought, hang on. And they seem to be mentioning Beatles songs a lot. Right? Someone, Andy Clark was on the page. He's like, oh yeah, to be honest with you, that sort of problem, I think we should just let it be and move on, you know. And one guy stuck his hand up to ask a question, and he said, okay, first of all, I noticed you've been naming Beatles songs and rattled off a list of half of which I hadn't even noticed. And said, first of all, did I miss any? And secondly, do you not think it's taking the piss a bit? But I thought it was brilliant. They'd obviously sat there beforehand and gone, right, Beatles songs, how many can you get in? Had a little competition up on stage, right? So it's the plan for meetings. Anyway, sorry, we were doing a segment.
Lucky charms.
I actually think that bit of the segment is actually probably going to be far more interesting than the second part. But
brilliant games to play in meetings.
I don't really want to be the one that starts. So
Christoph, we were going to begin with you before we started booting.
It was mem copies, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Now, what I was thinking is that one thing I think would be really good for the Linux community is to have a decent, proper, easy-to-use Active Directory type replacement. Something that isn't just open LDAP, where you have to hack it all yourself to actually make it work. Preferably something that Windows can use as well.
Do you mean your definition of easy-to-use or everybody else's
Something that your average sysadmin in a company can set up and then have, you know, like... Linux desktops around and manage them easily. Mix their Windows and Linux desktops together and manage them easily.
I've been hoping the answer to this thing's problem is going to be drifting my way over the last year or two, really. And I think at the moment you've either got NIS and NFS
which is rubbish,
and
right?
Bits of Kerberos and L-Up and glue it all together yourself. I think, or
which is horrific,
well, exactly, and it's still probably not quite the same. And the other thing is, I think Aqua's going to mention.
Zach, how you doing?
Yeah,
just shut your fucking noise. Shut your fucking noise. Just because, just because server technology can't hold your.
Just as no one's paying you any attention. You
part
know,
of the problem.
Big boys are talking. please be quiet.
Part of the problem is we asked them what they want and forgot that we wouldn't give a shit.
Just no, because some people's concentration lasts longer than a fucking MTV segment. Forgive
right,
us.
So
while
you
we're
want you
about.
Want what Active Directory?
No, basically, I think. Go on, Chris. That's
the idea is basically so you could deploy Linux desktops in a company and have them all integrate and have a Linux-based kind of Active Directory equivalent, and the Windows machines would all use that as well, and it would all be managed in one place. It would be nice and simple.
Isn't everyone going to write in and say, this is what Novell Directory Services is for, this is what eDirectory is for, this is what that the Red Hat Directory Services LDAP thing is for, Fedora Directory Services or something. Fedora Services for directories that are active or something.
Yeah, Fedora Active Enterprise Directories, Active Enterprise Synergetic Active Enterprise Directory. Oh.
That's exactly what it's called.
1.0 beta.
Seriously, I mean, I, right, and I'm not particularly in touch with the boring heap of shit you call a job, right? I'm not particularly following this.
I really
stuff.
Am fucking going home, right? fuck you!
I'm not particularly in touch with stuff,
grip
but even I am aware that people have already tried to solve this problem, right? You're not the first person to go, that Active Directory thing on Windows, wouldn't it be great if we had that too?
No.
So what's wrong with the stuff
people have
got?
Tried to solve this problem already. As far as I'm aware, they're not particularly easy to use. I don't think they
I tried setting up Fedora Directory Server. Admittedly, this was a while ago, and I just got a bit confused with the first
they're not well
documented.
There's all this kind of stuff.
A soluble problem. Leave aside for the moment the question of whether it's an interesting
problem. Can it be dissolved in water?
This problem cannot be dissolved in water. Okay. Well,
that's a bit dividing by zero, isn't it?
For God's sake.
I don't know if it's a solvable problem. I kind of hope it is a solvable problem.
I mean, whether it's a solvable problem with the Unix architecture is another thing, but Windows have already solved this problem, so it must be solved.
Yeah,
you
can get Linux processes to authenticate against Active Directory itself as well.
Hang on. So
integrate into an Active Directory domain. You can't kind of do
this,
it the other way
this,
around.
This perfect thing that there is in your head, it's Active Directory. They did everything right.
No, I'm not. Well,
I mean, most of the people I know who use Active Directory, there's some bits they'll go, oh, that's actually really good. And some bits they'll go, well, yeah, it's all right. And some bits they hate. Yeah. Nobody's looking at it and going, Active Directory's brilliant. Just implement it.
I think, really, I mean, for me.
So, if Microsoft aren't I mean, you know, Microsoft tend to be, you know, big picture, complicated configuration sort of solvable stuff for a lot of things like this. Is the kind of magic that you want actually doable? Does it make sense?
I think so.
I think it's sensible and doable.
It doesn't have to be, I don't think, incredibly complicated. I think my experience with Active Directory domains isn't very large, but certainly one thing my present company find quite useful is the fact that you just add a user to the domain and they get a mail account set up, they get a home directory set up, and then you log in, it automatically connects
you
to
log
your
in
home directory, you get a mail
works.
Account, you get centralized group and user management. The board corner of the room are about to explode.
Right, okay, so what your fucking idea?
my
come
thing's
on,
just
maybe I want my desktop to be pink.
I mean, I want to be out of the theme, the lib notified bubbles.
I just wanted
which
to
which you
buy
actually
a melon.
Can't do without hacking the sea. I was looking it up today.
Gimpelot Prime.
I'm not hacking the sea. I want an easy way of doing it. That's not my thing. By the way, I'm not going to take my brilliant wish for the Amazon.
Mine isn't made the desktop pink.
Burn it on that.
Yeah.
Right,
John
Jono,
he just wanted to buy a melon.
That melon was for display purpose only. Anyway. Mine is actually quite boring.
You're not kidding. And you thought the last one was boring, listeners? Are you ready?
I actually wondered what the point of this was, in all honesty. But
right.
Go ahead.
Basically, I want, if I could see anything, I'd like openoffice.org to be more maintainable. And when I say that, basically, I'd like openoffice.org.
Sorry, I drifted off there, Dylan. Sorry.
It's all right. Your attendance is not required. From talking to OpenOffice developers, it's this huge chunk of code. It's very, very difficult to work with. And I just think that it's such an important part of the desktop. You know, it's like a significant number of people who are going to use the desktop are going to need office productivity software. The industry is heading towards the, you know, cloud computing and everything, but right now people are using desktop software to do office productivity, and what we're using is OpenOffice. Now, I accept that there's KOffice and that there's the GNOME Office suite of applications, but OpenOffice right now gives us the most amount of functionality. People are very familiar with the brand, and I just think that it needs to be more modular so people can improve it quicker, because it's just stagnated. Now, in terms of how this happens, I spoke to Sun about this a while back, and they said that it basically require 2 years of dedicated engineering time, doing no new feature development to do that, right? Which means it's obviously pretty difficult to do that, because it requires a significant amount of expenditure. But I think that it would be as kind of...
Hang on, bear with me. Sun shut down development on this?
No. So what I'm suggesting is that... I mean, my solution is as hand-wavy as Chris's, you know, I'd like to see an Active Directory equivalent. Yes. So this is something that is you can't put into practice straight away, but I think it will be worthwhile. There's a lot of people working on OpenOffice together. There's IBM, there's Sun, there's that law company that's got a load of developers that we interviewed one time. There's, Novell.
Propylon?
Propylon, I think. Propylon.
Well remembered.
Sean something.
I was confused that prophylactic.
I believe
not twice, you don't.
I believe we made that mistake last time.
I just think that it would be better if Sun are the kind of the what's the word I'm looking for? The
hub.
No, they're kind of, you know, they're the, I was going to say, the arbiters of the code, essentially.
Sponsors,
yeah, they're kind of they're the grandparents of the code, right? They're the owners. And I think it's their responsibility to forge this process forward and to work with people like IBM and Novell and people like that to make it happen. I don't think Sun should burden this responsibility themselves, absolutely. But unless we get OpenOffice in a decent shape, it's always going to be the ugly office suite that sits on quite a nice Linux desktop.
So you want basically everyone to down tools on feature development and just modularize.
It's not so much completely down tools, but at least I'd rather we sacrifice a certain amount of feature development and get it in shape, because we need that investment to push it forward in the next 5 years. It just worries me that, you know, like Firefox development is excellent. X.org used to be in exactly the same position when it was with X386, and then they modularized it all, and look at the feature development that's happened there. But it took them some time to make that happen. What it means is that feature development in the future will be quicker because the code's more modular. Because right now it's just this enormous chunk of code.
Do you remember what happened to X when X was X11? It was really hard to maintain. The reason they created X.org and spent ages splitting it up into bits just so they could do feature development faster. And then we saw a lot of cool stuff happen to X.
Right.
So it needed.
Any reason nothing happened with X, I don't think.
There's loads of bureaucratic shit.
But there's loads of bureaucratic shit around OpenOffice.
Exactly. And that's the other side of the problem.
Well, the one thing that I think would happen if it were modularized is everyone would care about the spreadsheet and the word processor, and everyone forget about everything else.
People wouldn't forget about the presenting.
The modularization would occur at many levels. So, like, one aspect could be, for example, there'd be the core chunk. I mean, take X as an example. You know, they separated out the font rendering elements of it, as far as I'm aware. This is my knowledge from 5 years ago. But, you know, from what I could tell, that they separated that a bit out, and it meant that someone could just focus on that, and they could compile it in less than a day, you know, to work on that. That's the problem. I mean, you need to be a rocket scientist just to compile OpenOffice, let alone to do anything with it.
Your problem with it, when you say, people would need to stop and work on it, and that's exactly what Firefox did. Right? Yeah. Firefox is one of those things that you talk about modularizing that I know most about.
Go away 4 years and then come back again.
If we assume that Firefox 2 basically made it to the point where you could develop cool stuff on it, Firefox 1 was still a bit shonky in places. Firefox 2 was good. And then Firefox 3 is an example of the cool stuff you can do now that you have a modular Firefox, right? Netscape released the source code in 1997, and we got Firefox 2 like 2 years ago. That's not saying there's going to be no new feature development for 18 months. That's a decade, which we have nothing.
In
that point, Microsoft have released three new Office versions, none of which we can read.
You could theoretically say that, well, hang on a second, if it's going to take that long for Firefox, it's going to take that long for everything. But it didn't take that long for X. I'm not saying it would take that long. I'm not saying it would take that
short. While you're waiting for this all to be modularized, it's not like OpenOffice goes away. You still have a workable, usable Office suite.
You have a workable, usable Office suite right up until Microsoft release another version of their Office suite and you can't read the documents. And then it's useless. Then it's Abbey Word. which nobody uses because he can't read the documents. No, but you know,
from what I can tell, I mean, there's no
AliWord people are really cross now.
There's no reason why you couldn't produce support for those Microsoft file formats in the existing Office suite. But I think my point here is that I think there needs to be a lot more focus on solving this problem. And I agree that it's a very hard technical problem, but right now it seems that basically, you know, and I don't know if I'm representative in my view on this, but new feature development in OpenOffice, no one gives a shit. It's nothing particularly interesting.
No, I agree with you.
And the most interesting thing that they did was add support for extensions, which means that people can more easily produce interesting additions. But we're not seeing anything particularly interesting going on because from what I can gather, it's such a pig to work with.
It is. I mean, pick a stupid example. The thing I'd really like to see in OpenOffice is the presenter view. I'd like to be able to, when you do a presentation, to have a notes page on my laptop screen and the actual presentation on the projector. And you can't do that at the moment. There isn't. There's coming in three. There's a spec for a presenter. It is coming in three, but there's a spec for a presenter view. There's been a spec for ages.
Right.
And one of the problems with building it is that it's been really hard. They've had to refactor a load of code to make it possible. And that took ages. Yes, I'm naive in this, but it doesn't seem to me that if you had a nice modular OpenOffice.org, that it would be that hard a thing to implement.
Exactly, yeah.
I might be totally wrong. OpenOffice hackers might be saying, yeah, you're ridiculous. It doesn't matter how modular it is, that would always be hard. At which point, I apologize, you know.
The thing is that looking at options, I mean, you could theoretically say, okay, let's not do this with OpenOffice. But if right now, from what I've heard from a few different developers who've worked on OpenOffice, is that OpenOffice is basically right now is unmaintainable. That's the thing I've been told. Is that it's unmaintainable, and basically what they're doing is they're shaving off the edges where possible to add additional feature development. And there's this small group of people in Munich or wherever it is who are the original Star Division developers who know how it works, but they're busy with feature development. But it seems like we need to invest some time to get it in a more modular state so we can actually do some stuff like this. And it becomes a proper open source project.
Those guys are still hacking on it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
That's why it started. They're all employed by Sun, aren't they?
Some bought Star.
But for me, the only feature that's going to matter in the next 2 years in OpenOffice is going to be support for the Office XML formats.
I think it's going to be that, and I think it's going to be keeping data
Office
online
Open
as well.
XML formats, I think, like DocX and XLS, X, and so on. So, Mr. Gingua.
Lang all right. Raj.
My go. I mean, what I would like to see is I would like to see a team of usability people, HCI people, who are paid for by somebody. I have no idea where this money comes from.
Right.
A duck flies in the window and delivers a big pile of cash. Right? And then we use it to employ a big HCI team who sit down and look at the Linux desktop as a whole, the free desktop as a whole, I should say, and then have the ability to stipulate that changes should be made, whether they're wide-ranging changes or not wide-ranging changes, whatever, and then people concentrate on making those changes happen. I don't know whether this would be one distro doing this and then that would deliver competitive advantage to them, or whether the community as a whole does it. I know we've talked about how you can't just say, here is a list of features, now open source developers, this is what you will work on, because that's not how it works. But at the moment, the stuff I see people doing, the things like the GNOME human interface guidelines and so on, they're snipping around the edges at stuff. And every time discussions come up, you say, how should I best do this? And the feedback you get tends to be, well, in an ideal world, you do this, but that requires loads of wide-ranging changes to the way Nautilus works, the way the desktop works, the way the file systems work, the way Linux works. So instead, do this. We're hitting local maxima, but we're not actually doing it right. It's another down tools thing, really. Mm. I'd like people to say, this is how a desktop would work. I mean, if you went to Callum Benson, the Sun guy, I'm picking a usability guy out of my head, and said, how can we make the Linux desktop we've got better? He'd have a load of ideas. But he said, how could we make a really great desktop? Don't start from here.
Right.
I wonder how different it would be. The impression I get is it would be quite a lot different.
So you're talking about...
I'd like someone to have the... Because he hasn't got the time. None of the people have got the time to sit down and spend a year specifying what the greatest free software desktop imaginable would actually be like, because they've got, you know, jobs to do. I'd like it to be there.
It sounds
job.
Like this needs to be a research project at a university.
It needs to not be too researchy. I mean,
that's a great opportunity for someone to do something.
Yeah, I mean, there are research, but things like Microsoft Research do this kind of thing all the time. They've got teams who will sit there and say, this is how it should work. But it's all kind of, you know, they put out, well, I was going to say a PDF at the end of it, but it's actually probably a postscript paper, which yeah. gets delivered at Sig Chai or whatever. And then people go, well, that's very interesting, but you never actually see any of it happen. I'd love to take a little bit, put me in the room and say, okay, you've got a year. And we'll pay your wages and buy you all the buns you want, design it, and then when you've designed it, we'll build it.
So are you expecting this to be kind of rewrite, when you say rewrite the free software desktop, I mean, obviously that's either GNOME, or it's KDE, or it's Windows Maker, are you expecting them to come along and go, throw away all of that, and here's...
I don't know. If I knew what they were going to come up with...
Or you'd expect to be...
There'd already be a specification.
No, the point is, are you expecting them to kind of... come up with a basically something completely new, maybe a combination of all the best bits of all of those. So you're not saying redesign GNOME, you're just redesign.
Yeah, I'm saying redesign everything. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, what they come up with might not be a WIMP desktop at all. It might not be Windows and a mouse. You know, my personal feeling on that is we're starting to feel the pinch a bit with the desktop metaphor. Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody needs to come up with a new metaphor. Do what Xerox PARC did in the 70s. Perhaps. I mean, okay. I don't know. I'm not an HCI expert. But people, so, to my mind, everyone who's doing this kind of thing is just academic.
But you're basically talking about...
And I want a distribution or the Linux community or somebody to say, we're going to do this and then we're going to listen.
Basically, you want to take the theory back to first principles and redesign it from the ground up and say...
Yeah,
you're basically making the noises that people have been making for a long time in the GNOME camp at the moment, which is, GNOME's boring, it needs to be more exciting, but I don't actually know how exciting that is. And don't get me wrong, I've made similar noises in the past. I wrote a blog entry a little while back when the thread was going on Planet GNOME about it. But a lot of people have made the valid criticism that, well, what do you seek to achieve? You know, do we need something radically different?
My point about this is, I don't know. If you get a year and then you put it together and they say, this is how it would work, and then you look at it and you go, that's not actually going to deliver anything different, then we'd know that spending that time doesn't deliver you anything better. At the moment, we don't know. It's all kind of, we should do something different. And people say, what is it? You go, well, I don't know because I haven't had time to think about it. And they say, well, it probably won't deliver anything better anyway. It will give you a firm answer to the question. At that point, it's a cost-benefit analysis. You can then say, we can see what this will deliver that's better. And now we can see roughly how much work it will be to implement this. Is the amount of work it will take worthy of the benefits we'll get out of it? But at the moment, you've got no idea what the benefits are and you've got no idea what the costs are because you don't know what it is we're heading for.
Okay.
Well, mine's a lot more boring than that. Unfortunately, I did admittedly drift off during both of yours, by the way, and I'm not lying, but then again, it's getting pretty late.
Stupid server thing.
So, no, it's not. Sorry, my mic keeps falling down.
I'd like to add this new switch to tar.
No. But in the first,
you can never have 70 enough tar switches.
It's going to deal with zoo compressed files.
Well, I'm just going to go away and wait for you to finish now.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
So, yeah. Take a while.
Yeah. So what else could we add to time? Sorry, carry on.
Go on then, Laurel and Hardy. Actually, you know what?
Dilly. Thank you. Oh, great. Another doctored photo on the forums.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, yeah, we ought to say the A-team guy.
It's Jezra, I think.
The guy. Yeah. Can we announce that? What he told us at LRL USA?
No, please don't. It's just horrible.
No, actually.
Didn't we mention it in the show?
Maybe I did. I don't know. I don't know whether he feels kind of protective about it.
He's done another picture that's on the forums, and it's of us as the A-team.
And it's rather amusing.
It is, actually. We were really impressed with that.
Picture of you as BA.
the thing that worried me about it is it looks like, you know, me as BA and Jono as Face and Adam as Murdoch and Hannibal. And I had to look twice to confirm that it's actually Hannibal with Chris's face.
Yeah, it is me as Hannibal.
It's quite disturbing.
It is pretty freakily accurate.
It's pretty good. Just the picture in general is fantastic.
You did a great job.
We were really impressed with that. Sorry, anyway, we were talking about boring
servers. You're boring servers.
Thank you very much, Stanley. actually, you're Stanley, so you can start laughing.
thought, brilliant, you're Oliver Hardy, I'm lucky.
While you were talking about Pink Desktop, it did occur to me, actually, one thing I'd settle for in the short term is somebody making the GNOME panel, the font colour, being able to set that differently to what the system font colour is, because I have a different colour desktop background. Shut your face. You asked for a pink desktop, so shut up.
I didn't say anything!
No, you're just in the mocking mood after you started the segment. But what I would settle for at the moment would be that using Firefox does not lock you out of certain websites. My example of this is certain websites, web tools at my university. I couldn't use them in Firefox. No, it wasn't the Wolf. it was equally awful, though. I think it was called eVision. I don't know whether it's a commercial product or it's just something internally developed.
eVision.
Yeah, to display your module result. It's just a tool to display your module
e-vision,
results.
It displays your E. You go, there's this big rotating E that only works in Internet Explorer.
It's like it looks like a scene from an American movie when emails just arrived.
Did he come down a big tunnel first before he got to you? Email. Four character passwords on screen.
Yeah, so no, I'm not talking about HTTP delivery method for drugs. it was just, and my other example of this was kind of the kinds of websites that you go to, say your bank's website or so on. Where using the Firefox user agent extension and changing it to Internet Explorer or Netscape 4, when that doesn't help you. And the example is your guy from the BBC, Ashley is his name, Ashley.
Oh, Ashley Highfield, yeah.
He demoed Ubuntu, was it a week or two? He ran Ubuntu for a week or two on his laptop. And one of the things he said he couldn't do was use his bank's website. Now, me and Chris have agreed that both our banks work fine.
As do both of my banks.
I have to say, I haven't found a site that Firefox doesn't work with for probably at least a year or two.
For quite a
while. I had one about a month ago.
Bear with me, there's a lot of internal corporate intranets, internal corporate web applications, which are IE only, an awful lot of them. But bear with me, are you, Adam, talking about having Firefox change so it's capable of doing these things, or are you talking about the world getting a clue and not building Internet Explorer only applications?
Yeah, unfortunately, I am talking about people that are developing applications that only web applications that only work in Internet Explorer.
You want people to get a clue and not get it. Yeah.
And we know this isn't going to happen.
It's in the choice of get a clue or re-implement Internet Explorer. Yeah. Neither of which are.
Yeah, but
I'd like to make the ocean yellow. If everyone just puts a little bit of yellow food colouring in, maybe we can make it yellow.
You're taking the piss out of, the open source model. That's how it's supposed to work, remember? Everyone puts a little bit in and then takes according to their need, or is that Marxism? I forget.
But it's like a Chinese buffet, isn't it?
Eric Raymond just combusted at the comparison with Marxism, I think.
So you're talking about the world getting a clue.
Yeah.
How is this miracle to be achieved?
Well, I mean, the point we were discussing. You're a pair of arseholes, aren't you?
I didn't say anything!
The pair of you just been ripping on me and Chris ever since we dared to discuss some sort of technology.
How long have you known these two?
About, I think, 7 or 8 years.
And you've only just realised they're a pair of arseholes?
They've never been a complete pair of arseholes in such a sustained attack on me personally.
They do this every time.
Thus spake the Lord of the Rings.
He only wanted to buy a melon.
Expert on arseholes within the radio team.
No.
All right, laughing arseholes. Give it a rest. Right. To finish my point, yes, when we were discussing what we were going to discuss in the segment, there was no stipulation that it had to be something that was solvable until I'd already thought of my thing. So, tough shit.
Yeah, okay? No, I mean, to be honest with you, do you think it will be solved by Firefox getting more... as you get more... there's a chicken and egg thing in that companies won't get Firefox in because it doesn't work with their internal applications, but no one's encouraged to make internal applications work with Firefox because companies don't run it. But as, the Firefox marketing team get in there and rattle more doors and so on, do you think we're going to see this change and people get a clue about, web standards and the point?
I think that's the issue, really. To me, I think basically it's the same open source problem, is that there are entrenched people around the world who aren't even aware of things like standards and interoperability and that kind of thing. And I don't think, the Spread Firefox campaign, as well as they're going to try forever, I don't think they're ever going to solve that problem until, because I think in every company there's little pockets of guys that are running Firefox or even Safari or some other browser, not Internet Explorer, and those guys are effectively just locked out of using these applications. Mm.
So it's the end of the show.
It is.
I just have to start every.
It's a little bit of a pregnant statement now, isn't it?
It is rather. It's not the end of all the shows just yet. Just, but, you know,
just time for the emails.
Time's a wasting.
All right, who wants to kick off?
I guess it's me then. Everyone's looking
Adamski,
at me.
Adamski, we'll go. Okay. We'll go this way round.
Okay. We've got an email from it's either Will from Cincinnati or Will Cincinnati, as we did last time, entitled Mac Jiver. The opening phrase is http://en.wikipedia.org/wiki/list_of_problems_solved_by_MacGyver.
Snappy.
It's a short one, isn't it? At the risk of being a killjoy, I always thought the MacGyver series was laughable and fraudulent. Technically, most gags could have worked, but everything depended on luck, exact timing, and convenient supplies of necessary chemicals and devices.
Unlike, of course, the A-Team, which relied on them being locked in.
Weren't you saying that everything was scientifically proven, Ak?
Yeah, I was. Because first of all, I mean, he's saying, yeah, it relies on luck, which he does to a certain extent, but did I miss the bit where it was television, for God's sake?
Hang on, you were defending the fact that it was scientifically proven. It is. You can't have it both ways, fat man.
No, it works. I mean, yes, I concede it relies on you being locked in a room with a submarine battery in it, but at least it's better than being locked in a room and then building a tank out of stuff you find in it.
Not really that much different.
You know, it is. MacGyver would use things like, you know, a magnifying glass and a deodorant can. Yeah, that kind of thing. And the second thing is, right, new ambition in life is to have a Wikipedia article, List of Problems Solved by Stuart Langridge. That's what I need now.
It'd be a lot shorter than the list of problems created by Stuart.
Yeah. Hey, what else does he say? Okay, well, Cincinnati.
Since so many well-planned commando actions and special forces actions with highly trained personnel using specialised equipment rarely go as planned, it is implausible such ad hoc improvisations could be made to work.
I'm amazed you managed to read that meaningless stream of bullshit out and not make even the smallest mistake in reading that sentence out.
I know. Well, I mean, it's getting pretty fucking strange now. Right, so, I mean,
you're losing the will, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Lost for words.
One of the underlying philosophical... I can't believe he's taking it so seriously. One of the underlying philosophical points of the show was the abhorrence of firearms. It seemed incredible that someone who is consistently getting into dangerous scrapes with villainous thugs and evil paramilitary monsters hasn't sense enough to know he needs an effective defence mechanism.
Oh, you are kidding me!
Hang on, this is a guy who's using the example of MacGyver to defend his policy on guns.
Right, well, I mean, yeah, substituting natural and chemical poisons, electrocution, fire and explosions for the neat and simple use of firearms. And some restraining devices. Wouldn't like to go into your basement. Seems like an insane and destructive mentality at work, as, like, opposed to shooting people.
which is positively constructive.
The property damage, general mayhem, and other environmentally negative results, like, as opposed to shooting people, of MacGyver's clever expediences were an easily avoidable catastrophe. Buy a pistol and rifle and learn how to use them. Before you take the opportunity to remark on the dangers of public ownership of firearms, take note that the highest murder rates in the world are in regions tightly controlled by police state or tribal factions who have disarmed the general populace. Also take note, the streets of the UK are becoming ever more ruled by thugs and gangs who appreciate their general omnipotence among a disarmed and generally helpless populace.
This is a guy in Cincinnati and therefore has deep and meaningful experience of the streets of the UK.
Lastly, safety does not necessarily connotate freedom and prosperity. Absolute safety comes at great and intrusive cost, as the people of UK are discovering the state eventually transforms itself into a criminal enterprise and makes an alliance in corruption with organised crime. You've given up your arms, are losing your personal freedoms, and national sovereignty and general public safety is not increasing but in decline. Just a note to cheer you all up. From Will at Will Cincinnati.
I now feel a great deal cheered up, yes. And if we need someone to defend us from the police state that is UK, we need someone to come in all guns blazing rather than using a magnifying glass. Will call you.
I was going to make several statements on this, but I don't think I will, actually.
No, I don't think you need to.
No, it's not necessarily a Mr. Cincinnati, but... Wow.
To be honest with you, it ought to be reasonably clear that this is a room full of four English liberals.
To be honest,
so the gun control thing is
is another argument. But taking MacGyver this seriously bespeaks a serious mental problem, in my opinion.
The thing is, right? In 5 years of Lug Radio, I've never been shell shocked, not once. And that email, I was just sat, my mouth just.
Wow.
What?
It's like, you've left us lost for words.
We're pretty, well, one, impressed, and two, pretty fucking scared as well.
So I think we should move on, though.
I think we should, yeah.
We should move on to an email from Henrique, or possibly Enrique Rodriguez, but I suppose it's Henrique. Enrique Rodriguez, who says, he's written in because we talked about Dragon Force, who was some kind of metal band, right? Tell from the tone of my voice how interested I am in this email, but Jono, I suspect, will care. He says, Dragon Force was a breath of fresh air in the power metal scene, just like Sonata Arctica and Lost Horizon were a few years back. They took the power metal sound to the extreme, pushing the technical axe trashing even further. They also didn't take themselves too seriously, which adds a bit of fun to all the cliches they represent. I made the decision to travel 50 kilometres at 11 p.m. to drive to buy their second album after listening to only 30 seconds of the first song. That's what I call being a complete lunatic. Oh, no, sorry. That's what I call being impressed. Best regards, Enrique Rodriguez. I'd like to hand you over to our metal correspondent with some comments on that, Jonathan Bacon.
Bullshit.
Isn't it interesting how a couple of people, I forget whether it was the forums or in email, have been telling us how we're really on form in the last couple of shows and how we were really delivering some serious, considered content. And all of the emails this week that we're reading out are nothing to do with Linux at all.
The thing is, in a word, that is nonsense. Dragon Force, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of power metal. I love power metal. I like bands like Manowar and Hammerfall and things like that. I'm in the brotherhood of pure, true metal. But Dragon Force, a shit. Okay, I hate to break this to you. You raise Sonata Arctica, which are not too bad, right? Lost Horizon are really good. But Dragon Force, shit.
What was the name of that band we saw on... We were sitting there the other day and John was playing Last.fm, the stream, and it picked a band and we went and looked up their website. Didn't... It was tagged False Metal in Last.fm.
Yes. No, the album name was called False Metal.
So someone got into Last.fm and edited it or something, right? And we went to look at the website and I assumed it was a big piss take because their album was called False Metal, but it turns out their album's not called False Metal at all. Someone else has changed that form and... They're completely serious.
It was...
What were they called?
I can't remember. It was
hysterical.
Outrageously tacky. I mean, they had, like, the video with, you know, the guy stood there looking straight into the camera and a wind machine blowing his hair back. And a drum kit with four bass drums. And it's just... It was just... I mean, I like some pretty cheesy music, right? But it was shocking. I'd just like to clarify, right, just in case anyone from Dragon Force is listening.
Because that happens a lot.
Because, you know, it is unlikely. But I, they're not my style of music. I'm not particularly into them. I'm very happy for them and their success. But I just think they're a big bag of cliches.
I want to point out, when, you know, we give a beating to, say, the iPod Linux project, there's no little caveat at the end that goes, if anyone from iPod Linux is listening, by the way, we really respect your project, right? None of that.
Although, in defense of Dragon Force, I saw them play in Manchester, and they had, like, the intro take before they came on stage, and it was actually very funny. So, they're confusing, because they are...
Was it the Rocky music?
They are a big bag of cliches, but also, they, you know, they don't take themselves too seriously in some ways, but then... They clearly love the cliches and take themselves too seriously, so I just don't know. I don't think about it.
So you appear to be surreptitiously a power metal fan here, man.
Oh, I love power metal.
Oh, my God.
I really love power metal.
I hate to stop you in your tracks, but while we're doing the email segment, do we actually have anything for the Linux segment?
We actually do. We've had an email from our friend and yours, Bradley M. Coon. His subject line is, feedback on a long-ago show as it relates to software freedom history. A subject that we're all big fans of. I apologize that my feedback is so late, but I listen to so many podcasts that I constantly am about 3 months behind. And even when I make an effort to catch up, it only keeps me a steady 3 months behind. A few months ago, I believe it was on If You're Not Into Metal episode on the 25th of March, Jono mentioned how Lug Radio brought the phrase, why do you hate freedom and its variations into the Floss World lexicon. It's interesting that you all, I'm not even going to try and pronounce that word, that phrase.
Promulgated.
You probably don't know that it was, in fact, an internal phrase used at the Free Software Foundation anytime someone agreed with anyone else, including on mundane topics such as where to go to lunch. That practice goes back to early 2001 or so. In fact, when I was executive director of FSF, whenever an employee didn't get something done, I would ask them why they hated freedom. And we'd all have a good laugh, and they'd tell me, justifiably, to fuck off. Although they used nicer terminology most of the time.
I'd like to point out at this point, it's nice to see someone from the FSF has got a sense of humour.
He's not with the FSF anymore.
No, left. That's why. Too humorous. Yeah. You like when you leave prison, they give you your personal effects.
Give
you
stuff back. Yeah.
Gave them the sense of humour.
Mean to the FSF.
Well, yeah. But they're pretty mean to us. I'm only kidding. They're very nice to us. I've lost my place in the email. I've carried the usage over to the Software Freedom Law Centre as well, and it's been an opportunity for constant amusement around here, just as was the FSF. Indeed, I understand from my colleagues still at the FSF that it remains a humorous catchphrase there too, even after 8 years of probably constant usage. I'm not sure if Floss World catchphrases are first to invent or first to publish regime, but I'll grant you the first publication credit if you grant FSF the invention credit.
That seems fair.
I share this with you in the hopes to remind you that the FSF still has and always had a sense of humour.
I didn't know he said that in the email.
Just slagged them for precisely not having a sense of humour. Yeah.
So don't be too hard on freedom obsessed underdogs. You might want to email me back if you read this on the air, so I can be sure to move the particular show to the head of the queue. Otherwise, I won't hear your response for 3 months.
Does that mean he's going to listen and go, oh, blimey, I must go to Lug Radio Live because it's the last show ever, and then it'll have been 2 months ago.
I'm also happy to phone in and tell you this verbally, but I think your voices read and email sound better than my own anyway.
Thanks a lot, Bradley. Love your emails. That was really nice, actually.
And you're a good man.
He is, actually. He's a good guy.
Christoph, I believe you're going to tell us about a rather exciting Linux event.
I was going to tell you about Lug Radio Live.
That as well. Count? Yeah. I was talking about Linux Action Show like Radio Live.
Do you think they're celebrating?
I don't know. Living in their ivory towers with all their
money.
Oh,
they are. Jupiter Broadcasting or something.
Do you think they're celebrating? What, that we're stopping?
Yeah.
Nah, they're good lads.
Were they second?
Doesn't really matter. So far down there.
Ooh,
can't see beneath the clouds.
Okay, let's
not take I'm only kidding! We love the Linux.
Are they coming to LRL?
No. We've got Dirk Schnurkelberger from the
not called Dirk Schnurkelberger.
Good grief.
From Linux Outlaws.
Well, that was kind of you, wasn't it? Fabian, yes. His name is.
Fabian
Schnurkel.
Schnitzel?
Yes. Not bloody Schnitzel.
She might not insult people who
are is the guy Dan? I'm going to look this up now. Yeah.
Dan Washko?
Yeah, the Linux Outlaws people are.
Yeah, I don't think the Linux Action Show guys, I don't think Chris and Brian can make it over this time.
Yeah, no, and it's quite a long way for them in their defence.
It is.
Yeah.
There are other people sitting in America right now saying, it's a long way for us too, and we're coming.
In fact, we should give a shout out to the Linux Action Show
guys. We should,
guys.
Though, actually.
And the Linux Outlaws guys, because, you know, there's going to be a vacant slot
at the top of the Linux podcasting pile.
Slightly harsh, but yeah, I think they're doing actually a pretty good job.
Do you think we need to do not like with the US government? We need to have like we need to make a nomination, and that kind of determines who the winner is.
Oh, right. So we sort of throw our support behind one of them.
Who's it going to be?
Which would be Peck?
Do we not have to like consult every state first?
No. We're super delegates.
Hashlock Radio guys, you can get well pissed.
Well, that's because they haven't released a show for about 6 months.
Well, I guess they're not going to be able to release any more shows, are they?
this is a good chance to strike out on their own.
It is.
It is, actually.
It is. Who are you going to give your nomination to?
Oh.
I think I'm going to go with the Linux Action Show. Because I like the Linux Outlaws guys, but the Linux Action Show guys.
I like the Linux Action Show. I listen to it quite a lot, actually. and then I had a bit of a dip, and then I started listening to it again recently. But I
actually no, I take it back.
I think I go for Linux Outlaws because Brian and Chris are kind of diversifying now. They're doing a podcast about beer, for which I respect them absolutely, and they're doing a few other things as well. But I can't help but think that I'm worried Linux Action Show is going to get a bit worse just because they're going to have less time to devote to it.
I mean, they changed their recording schedule because they were having difficulty finding the time, so that may be the case. But as I was going to say, I started listening to the Linux Action Show again recently, but I'm still going to give my vote to Linux Outlaws because I listen to about two or three shows now. I actually really like it. They've got a really nice, kind of relaxed,
They have kind of chilled out vibe.
I'd like to make a separate nomination.
Now, hang on. So we've got one vote for Linux Action Show.
No, I'm changing my thing.
Oh, you're changing yours?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so it's Linux Outlaws then?
No.
Even without hearing Chris's vote?
No, there's a third contender.
BSD Talk.
I'd like to put my vote for the Ubuntu UK podcast that Alan Pope, Tony Whitmore, and Davey Walker's doing. I think some guys in there as well.
Okay.
They do an excellent job with that. And it's not just because it's Ubuntu, I just think they do a good show.
I'm being put on the spot here to make a decision about a podcast, and I have to admit that I don't actually listen to any of them.
Network Block Monthly.
I listen to BSD Talk from time to time, and most of the time I don't really, I'm afraid. Oh. I'm sure they're all fantastically excellent, and maybe I should listen to
them. How very BBC of you.
Yes, absolutely.
How very Click Online of you.
We are all winners.
Yeah, we're all friends together.
We're all equally losing.
I mean, it is interesting. There's so many of these things around. I mean, you've got the Linux and Tech Show guys.
Somebody asked for the question on the forums about, you know, which are the podcasts that people listen to, and the people came up with lists of, like, you know, 10, 15 kind of different
actually,
podcasts.
Well. I just looked it up on their website. It is Fabian Scherschel and Dan Lynch for Linux Outlaws. Fabian is actually on that thread.
Ah, right, yes. Yeah,
and didn't recommend his own podcast.
He's been really active on the LRL forums.
Yeah.
And are they both coming to LRL?
I'm not sure.
I know Fabian's definitely coming.
Fabian's definitely coming. Isn't Dan in America somewhere?
No, Dan is in Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
He better be coming, then. Fabian's in Germany or something.
Yeah, he is. Okay. I'm sure he's coming, so I assume Dan.
Yeah, he works for hubcaps.co.uk.
And they will be exhibiting at Love Radio Live. They're exhibiting at Lug Radio Live in the UK.
Selling shell suits.
I believe that. Should we just do this bit on our own?
I think we.
Speaking of LRL UK, Christoph, over to you.
Not sure what else this is like. Yeah, Lug Radio Live in the UK, 19th, 20th of July, Lighthouse in Wolverhampton. Many fine and interesting speakers speaking.
Yes, including Jeremy Allison now.
Yes.
Yeah, a late addition to the schedule. I also say, if you're a speaker and you've received my email saying, is this time good enough for you, and you haven't replied to it yet, reply to it, please, so I can get the programmes printed. Otherwise, we're going to be sending programmes out in the post a week after the event.
We've got about two or three slots left in the exhibition, so if you you're thinking about exhibiting and you're not really sure and you haven't made a decision within the next week or two, you're probably going to be a little bit too late, so let me know.
And of course, let's not forget, it's going to be the very, very last recording of Lug Radio ever. Certainly it's going to be the last normal Lug Radio show that we're ever going to do.
So we'll record a bit, and then we'll drink lots of beer and have a bit of
party
about it.
We're going to have a real bash that night.
It is going to be a bit of a bash.
The Saturday night is going to be great. But yes, come to Lug Radio.
If you want to know who's speaking and stuff, you go to www.lugradio.org/live/UK2008.
Yeah, but just go to lugradio.org/live.
Live and click on the UK one.
Follow the UK link.
And if you need to drop us an email, either about the exhibition, about the show, or about the event, show@lugradio.org.
Yeah, and of course go to the forums at forums.lugradio.org as well.
Yes, okay. So
RC channels #LugRadio.
We've actually got a few people who are putting together some cool things to do at Lug Radio Live, which is rather nice. So if you want to get together with some people and do something cool,
yes,
let us know, and you know, we'll find you some space for it or something.
Yeah.
Speaking of cool things, I think we need to give a T-shirt out.
We do, actually. Yes, I'm inclined to give it to the guy who did the 18 picture on the forums.
Jezra,
because we're all highly, highly amused by that. Yes.
Yep. So, Jezra, do send an email to show@lugradio.org with your name and address, your full address, and your T-shirt size. Have we got many sizes?
We've mostly just got large left, I think. But send us the size, and, you know, if we don't have it, then I'll send you something else at random.
From what I remember of meeting him, he'd probably fit into a larger, right?
I think, yeah.
So.
I think Jez was also the guy who sent in the entry into the competition that I can't remember the name of.
Pimp My Lug Radio.
Pimp My Lug Radio, where it showed a picture of Chris.
I think we should just gloss over this, right? Anyway, that's the end of the show. So.
it was the picture of Chris surrounded by...
I'm not glossing over this story.
Those are pictures of intestines.
Gloss. Is that not the word I was using there? Gloss.
No, I believe you.
I thought you said you'd lost something.
Lost the will to live. That's
when people complain, we all talk over one another, that bit there, right? That's what they were talking
about.
Okay,
I guess people won't be talking about that anymore.
So, yes, we have one more ordinary show to do, and then Lug Radio Live, and then that's it. So if you want to send us an email and get us to read it out, now's your last chance.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a bit of a bumper emails thing on the next one. Because this is going to be the last emails segment for the next one.
Last
email segment. Last time to get your email read out on Lug Radio. So send them all in.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.